Well, this is Javier Ortega Alvarez, and he earned his BA in Art History and Economics from Florida State recently, and he's currently applying to PhD programs in Art History. And he's also working here at the Hirshhorn with our Senior Curator of Modern Art, Valerie Fletcher, and they're working on research for our upcoming exhibition, Supersensorial. And the exhibition looks at the international light and space movement through environmental installations by five pivotal Latin American artists. Some of their work is included in this gallery here, including Jesus Rafael Soto, whose work Javier will discuss today. The exhibition is currently at MoCA in LA, and it will be opening at the Hirshhorn on June 23rd.
Well, thank you all for coming. I'm going to be actually concentrating on this piece over here. There's two Sotos in the gallery, this one over here, which is 8 silver, and this one over here, which is 2 volumes in the virtual. They were both made at exactly the same time, 1968, but I'm just going to be concentrating on this one, and I'm actually going to be talking about the 1950s and his development through the years and how he came up to create this kind of work. So, he was born in 1923 in Ciudad Bolívar, which is a small town outside of Caracas, Venezuela, and then he acquired a grant to move to Caracas and study art. When he was about 16 or 18 years of age. He studied art for a few years, and then he got assigned a post at the same school where he acquired his studies. There's not much to say about his development in Venezuela since nothing happened at this time. Venezuelan art was pretty much the same as it had been through decades, and it was part of movements that were going on in Latin America that you're familiar with, like muralism and indigenism, which look towards pre-Columbian civilizations as a way of establishing a national identity. So countries like Mexico and Peru were highly involved in this kind of movements, but countries like Venezuela and Brazil and Argentina were not as involved. So in those countries, this type of abstraction became a different way of establishing a national identity, and it looked more towards the art than towards that identity that I've been talking about. So in 1950, Soto acquired another grant, and this time he moved to Paris, which was a really good thing for him because it allowed him to study prior movements that he had been studying in Venezuela, but there was no research whatsoever that he could learn from. So movements like Cubism and abstraction that were highly influential in the beginning of the 20th century, Soto became very knowledgeable about. He was highly influenced by Mondrian, which I hope you all know the work. He was more interested in Mondrian's two-dimensional compositions and how the elements work in his paintings, and how he created kind of like a language of not relating to outside influences. Like there was no way of knowing that the art that Mondrian was creating was actually influenced by nature. Something like when you see a Cubist work of art, you still see the reference from nature, and you can still see reference points in the paintings, and that's what Soto eventually became aware, and that's where he became creating these kind of works. At the same time, he was also studying Kandinsky, and he became highly influential as Soto, more because of his spirituality and art, and also by Moholy Nagy, who was active in the Bauhaus during the 20s and 30s, and industry and art as relating. So Soto became creating in the 50s works that were very similar to Mondrian's work, but instead of the way that Mondrian created his work, which was just straight lines and primary colors, Soto actually used jagged lines and diagonal lines, and he stepped a little bit outside the boundaries of that color that Mondrian used. And sometime before 1955, he also started he was a musician himself, so he played guitar, and he was highly influenced by the modernist research into a different way of creating music in the 1920s, especially Arnold Schoenberg, I hope I'm saying that name correctly, which in 1921 he created serial music as a way of kind of creating a new language in music. That's not to say that Soto became started doing works that were actually a series of works. He just took the notion of creating serial music, which is just 12 notes on the chromatic scale, and using those 12 notes as a reference point to create the music. Then in 1955, he was participant in a exhibition at the Denise René Gallery in Paris, which is highly influential because it was the spring point of kinetic art. And kinetic art, as you may know, it's just related to movement and how movement is perceived in the work of art. Now, the difference between Soto and the other kinetic artists was that movement in Soto's works is suggestive. It's not actually in your face. It's not, their work is not moving, but you actually have to move to see the movement. So, I mean, you probably have noticed as you move through work that the squares in front of the painting move. So unless you move, the work itself would not move. And the same goes for that piece over there, which is a lot different from this, but it follows the same principle where you have to move around the work to see the work move. So it became this idea of seeing the work of art as an object and less as a work of art, which is the same idea the minimalists were following in the U.S. and the neo-concrete artists were following in Brazil. But the difference between, say, the minimalists and the work that Soto was doing was that the minimalists were highly concentrated on the object as a work of art. The Soto was just more concentrated on movement in the work and how the work is perceived. So he started thinking about this idea of instead of thinking about the work of art, you perceive it, which changes the notion of how a work of art is actually seen, which creates this kind of a sensorial interaction with the work, which was different from what it was being created at the time. Let's see what else. And then at the same time, there was a highly influential critic. His name was Jan Kley. When he referred to kinetic art, he said something about it's not that which moves, but something that creates instability in the real. So it comes into this kind of theoretical idea of how the work is perceived in space. So at the same time, a work like this, it doesn't matter placement of the work, the same way the minimalists were doing. So if you were to set the work on the floor, you would still move around the work and interact with it as an object instead of a work of art. It cannot be said the same thing about this one over here, pretty much has to say there, but. So he started toying with these ideas about theoretical notions of art and how art is being interacted with, and how this can still be considered a painting because it's painted and because it follows kind of like the same techniques, but at the same time can be considered a sculpture. So it falls in that category where it has no way of categorizing the work. So you don't see it as a painting or as a sculpture. You see it as an object of art to be perceived. So going back to a note about music and serialism, Soto in the 50s created this kind of structure for his work where he would limit himself to a certain amount of colors so he can take that part of the equation out and kind of concentrate on other things. So he assigned numbers to the colors, and he had a total of 9 colors ranging from primary, secondary colors, and then black, white, and ultraviolet. So most of his compositions such like this, you only see white and black. And even the silver squares on the bottom, they're reflective, so it's not really color that you're seeing there. This is not a way of restricting himself to a certain way of making art. It was more a way of him concentrating on other things that were pertinent for him in the art. And then back in the 50s when he started creating works that would follow the same manner, he created works that were on plexiglass and actually had more color to it. And I have an image if you just want to pass it around, kind of like a reference point. He created plexiglass compositions where there would be a plexiglass a pane on the back, and then he would take another plexiglass pane and kind of move it outwards into space. And then he started changing the distance between the first and the second or third or fourth. He added a certain amount of panes to it. And at some point he realized that by doing this, he started noticing that the work will move. And that's how he arrived at works like this. Since you would have to interact around the work, you cannot, if you stood just right in front of the work would be a lot different than if you stood on a diagonal way. So he started noticing that movement was more suggested than actually implied in the work. And yes, he's a kinetic artist, and yes, he dealt with movement in his work, but like I said, it's a suggestive movement, and that's pretty much what Soto started working on 50s onwards. And then both works, they were both made in 1968, and then he kind of stopped at a late 60s, he kind of stopped doing this kind of work, and then he still did it in the 70s and 60s, but then he moved into works like this, which were precursors to works that would be, as Jennifer was talking about later in the summer. They're called Penetrables, and he's fully engaged at that point with the idea of the viewer as participant in the work. You have to move through the work in works like the Penetrables to actually move the work. So he's still engaged in movement and suggestive movement, but unless you enter the work of art, you won't see the movement. So, if you have any questions, anything you want to say?
Mm-hmm. And they were very much into art already in the 50s and 60s, where a lot of people were already doing fairly similar work.
I wasn't trying to say that Venezuela was entirely devoid of art, but Venezuela benefited from the fact that they didn't have those pre-Columbian civilizations, so they were not stuck like Peru and Mexico in those kind of indigenous and muralism ways. But the same work that Soto was doing in Paris was going on in Venezuela at the same time. That's why some of the artists here are indicative. They're all Latin American artists, and somebody like Julio Park on the other side, he was from Argentina, and he also benefited from this new wave of thinking in Latin America, but his research was mostly into light and the movement of light instead of the movement of the work, which is entirely different from what Soto was doing. So,
I'm just curious how long the work
once he left, as far as I know, once he left for Paris in 1950, he pretty much stayed there. He went back to Venezuela a few times, but it was in like long periods. He had a contemporary, Carlos Cruz Diaz, who's part of this kinetic movement also, but he was kind of in the fringes. He was more concerned with color and interaction of color in space. Somebody like Carlos Cruz has actually traveled to Venezuela and had both studios in Venezuela and Paris. I mean, as far as I know, Soto pretty much went to Paris and stayed there for the rest of his life. So, all right. No more questions?
Movement, implied movement, and work. I know that you're exactly what you're doing.
Kind of. It's kind of weird because the artists in the gallery are actually all were doing different things at different times. Like Soto was actually the first of all the artists in the gallery that started doing this kind of work. And some artists like Martha Botto, she was more considered of an optical artist, like op art, which Soto actually did also. But it's kind of hard to categorize Soto as an op artist because even though this is an optical illusion, it's still movement. So you have to categorize it as kinetic art because it moves. Something like this is an optical illusion. I mean, you can see some movement, but it doesn't really move. So all these artists were working all at the same time in Paris, but Soto was the first of them that started doing this kind of works. So. Yes, so the work that is going to be on Supersensorial is it's a large-scale work. It's pretty much the size of one of these galleries, and it's hanging nylon rods. Some are blue, some are yellow. The one that's going to be installed here is going to be a blue installation, and it's just hanging rods. I've heard it described as rain, kind of like raining hanging rods. And you pretty much walk through. I mean, the work of art can be entirely undisturbed, and if you stand on one end, you can actually see the other side through the little hallways that the rods create. But if you walk through it, the work moves with you. So it's just it's kind of like interaction with the work of art. So.
And what year
did you make that work? 1973. Yeah, he started doing works like those around the late 60s, and then at some point in the early 70s, it was the work was conceived in 1973, but it wasn't actually made until 1999. So somewhere around the early 70s, he created this notion of the penetrable and how you penetrate the work, which was actually the same time another artist that is going to be in the exhibition in the summer, Helio Oiticica, which is a Brazilian artist. He also created, he kind of coined the word in the early 1960s, in 1961, I believe. He created kind of like a room where you would step in. He called that a penetrable. So, all right, well, thanks for coming.